Chartoff, and you're listening to episode 800 of Film Wax Radio on this Friday, April 12th, 2024. Who better to bring on for the big 800 than the person who has been on this show more than anybody else? In fact, not only are we going to start this episode momentarily with Larry Fessenden's recent appearance along with the actor Alex Hurt, but I am following that conversation with another episode with Larry from October of 2 years ago, an episode I've never put on the podcast. It was only available as a video on our YouTube channel. So I'm putting on this bonus episode that's only been on YouTube. It has not been on the podcast. You can listen to it afterwards. It was from, I think, October of 2022. We'll play that one. So I think, I don't know, at this point, there's like 10 episodes with Larry, something like that. Maybe not quite, but something like that. Blackout is the name of the new film. Writer-director Larry Fessenden has created some of the most original and memorable independent horror films of the last 25 years, from Habit and Wendigo to The Last Winter, Skin and Bones, Beneath, and Depraved. His latest, Blackout, ranks among his most chilling and thought-provoking works, with a cast that includes Alex Hurt, our other guest coming up, Addison Timlin, past guest of the podcast, Michael Buscemi, Joe Swanberg, past guest of the podcast, Kevin Corrigan, past guest of the podcast, Barbara Crampton, past guest of this podcast. Phew, earning rave reviews on the festival circuit, Blackout marks the long-awaited reunion of Dark Sky Films and Larry Fessenden's Glass Eye Picks, two iconic horror companies that brought us contemporary classics such as Ty West's The House of the Devil and The Innkeepers, Jim Mickle's Stakeland, and Adrian Garcia Bagliano's Late Phases. Blackout opened theatrically at the IFC Center last month and is now available on demand on various digital platforms as of today, Friday, April 12th. Painter Charlie, played by Alex Hurt, son of actor John Hurt, wakes up in an upstate motel where he appears to have been living for some time. After he packs and leaves, he encounters various people in the small town where everybody knows your name. Charlie is saying goodbye to the estranged love of his life, Sharon, and settling his affairs with a manic urgency that culminates with a call to a friend, Earl, "You better be ready, I'm coming." But Charlie never makes it to his friend's house. When the sun goes down, he has convulsions while driving his car, goes off the road, and ends up in a ditch. Charlie, it seems, is a werewolf. He attacks his rescuers and moves through the outskirts of town at night, wreaking havoc. But the next day, he can't remember the things he's done. Now the tight-knit town must rally to find out what is tearing it apart, mistrust, fear, or a vicious monster. Here's my conversation with the great Larry Fessenden and actor Alex Hurt right here on Film Wax.
Is that it, Charlie? You're out of here?
No, I just needed a spot for the month.
Girl, I'm heading over. I gotta make a couple quick stops, and then I'll be there.
Tell me what's on your mind.
I wanted to ask if you'd take a look at some of these papers I found in my dad's estate about Jack Hammond.
The guy behind the Hilltop Resort project?
He is such a corrupting force in this town. I want to see him behind bars.
If you want to delve deeper, I can show you the way.
No, I'll be gone. Sharon?
What's up?
Sorry I'm late. I'm leaving, you know, for good. I wanted to say goodbye.
Where are you going to go?
I heard this noise outside the studio. I woke up in the woods, this big gash on my neck. Then I saw it, this full moon. I was separating from myself. That's when I realized I wasn't me anymore. It's been 3 months since that night, and every full moon since, on the night before and the night after. Total blackout.
It's all the excitement.
They found another body up in Briar Woods last night.
Everyone needs to go home. There's something out there on the loose and dangerous.
What'd you see that night?
I saw a monster.
You seem a little wounded. What's really going on with you?
I can't say.
Hi, guys. Welcome.
Howdy. Hey, Adam.
Good to see you. It's early, so thanks for doing this on my schedule. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, no worries.
Yeah. Nice to meet you, Alex.
Nice to meet you, too, dude.
Nice to meet you, Larry. Larry, where are you? New York?
In my hovel in New York.
Yes. Okay, very good. I thought so. Well, it's good to see you guys. Is the film is opening today, correct? Blackout is opening today and at the IC Center. Is that true?
Yep.
How does one still manage to get a theatrical for a truly independent type of film? Can you start with that?
You have to start 30 years ago and know some people.
It doesn't hurt.
IFC has been very supportive over the years. We've shown lots of movies there. They even had a Glass Eye retrospective. So I'm very appreciative to be able to call them. And of course, it's not a business of favors. So I think they liked the movie well enough and thought it had some good reviews and that it might play pretty well in the city. So we're very fortunate to be at IFC again. And I have to tell everyone that I also have an art show of my MonsterVerse, which are the three scary movies I've made with sort of universal movie monster callbacks. So it's really nice. On the second floor, they always have a little alleyway with posters. And so I invited myself to put up some Glass Eye trinkets. So I'm really excited about that, including animation cells from the movie. There's a couple of animated sequences which indicate
Blackout.
The monster's paranoia and psychedelic worldview. So anyway, check that out. If you go to the theater, go to the second floor and see our art.
Are you guys going to be there tonight? Or at all?
Yes, we're both going to be there.
That's great. Yeah, for like the what time? Like I'm assuming like there's a 7:30 screening you're going to be at.
Yeah,
there is a 7:30 screening that we're going to be at, and then there's like a pre-party thing, and then there's a post-party thing, and I'm sure a lot of
no party.
Lots
there's
of party.
A pre-party thing. There's a post-party thing, but there's no actual party in the middle.
The movie is the party.
The movie is the party.
That's a good point. I like that. So I know one thing, Larry, you just already mentioned, these kind of homages, for lack of a better term, to Universal films. And, these films are in no way remakes at all, but they are a fresh sort of look at how do you bring these iconic characters back to the screen in a way, but in a way that's more maybe relevant to the day. Is that a fair way of saying how you begin the process?
I think a lot of artists draw from their childhood, both good and bad, trauma and otherwise. And I was very affected by these movies as a kid. I felt that they represented whatever sort of alienation one felt and sadness for the outsider. So Frankenstein and Wolfman, and to a lesser degree Dracula, but the vampires have their own allure. Anyway, I've tried to capture that, but it's not really nostalgic, even though people are recognizing some of the callbacks. I'm actually deeply concerned with the current state of affairs in society and humanity, and so I'm, and the actual answer is right here on the screen with us. Alex brought tremendous humanity to this role. We're not working with the audience or anything like that. We're talking about what is the nature of the werewolf, what dilemma would that rise in a in your personal life? And of course, in my films, there's often some sort of conversation about alcoholism and other addictions and whatever, just human frailty, which I find essential. And you know, it's more fun to discuss those heavy matters in a genre film, in my opinion. So that's what I've sort of set out to do. But Alex, his commitment to the role is why you should see the movie. You know, I feel this very deeply.
Yeah.
Even though he wears a black hat, which indicates less seriousness than I was trying to indicate.
I
wore this for you, man. I wore this for you.
just so you know, I'm reveling in it.
He's a Jaws. He's a Jaws fan. If you didn't know, just a little bit, not majorly.
That's right, Mr. Let's
Same
just.
here. Yeah. I think we would probably all share that. So Alex, what did you do? Were you also familiar maybe with like Lon Chaney Jr.'s portrayal, and or did you go back and look at that? And or you know, I don't know if that always helps. Sometimes, you know, I think
No,
not taking.
yeah. Well, I think every actor is different. Every person's different, right? We all have our different processes and the things that like get in the way or help us grow. First of all, like, let me just say, like, my perform, like the work I do in this film. I mean, and that's a subjective thing. I'm glad that Larry loves it because he's had to look at it for years, like years, because I did a film with his son as well, with Jack.
I remember.
And so, like, I really am, I'm grateful that he enjoys seeing my work. But working with him was the greatest gift of my life. That was the party. That actually was the party. The party you're going to get to see is like the video of the party. And I think he's a magnificent artist, and I'm really touched that he wanted to work with me. So, it was just a total pleasure cruise. It was like I won the lottery. But yeah, preparation. Well, so the reason I think one of the reasons Larry and I clicked was I grew up watching the Universal Monster movies too, and my favorite performance of all time was Boris. I just like James Whale's Frankenstein was like that was the first movie. I think I was 5 when I watched it, and it was the first time I ever had the experience of being like, oh, this is what an actor can do. This is how much soul they can bring. This moved me, like beyond anything I had seen at that point. And so I became a my godfather was a big Universal fan, and he like I mean, you know, he's just a guy from the Bronx. You know, he was the Groucho Marx act at a club. He met my mom. They were best friends. They've been, you know, he helped raise me. And literally his wall to this day is covered in VHSs. Like it's just a wall of VHSs with 3 films on each one. And he can tell you about each of these movies and the characters, the character actors, especially in each
Yeah,
one. So I
sure.
was raised by this psychotic, obsessive geek. And then I caught his sickness. And so when I walked into Larry's house in Woodstock, I was like, what is happening? And we just sort of nerded out, you know, that's what happened. You know, I mean, you should see his toy collection. It's something to awe at, you know, like, I mean, like you go to the bathroom, it's like, what the fuck? Where'd you get that? Yeah. So, yeah, we clicked.
Well, we did
Nice.
talk about that on Jack's set. Alex was dressed in World War One garb and doing a fairly heavy role. But off camera, we would chat about, you know, what inspired him as an actor. And of course, it was his dad that was also in this Universal movie. So it just shows how long a movie takes to sort of come together. Because I realized that, you know, that Alex could be the Wolfman. And, you know, I haven't really actively set out to make that movie yet. I had been working on the script in various ways for years because I did a radio play and a fraction of it. But anyway, this is just what's nice about making films with a somewhat organic way. It's almost like meeting Alex and decide to make the movie. But, sort of, I always talk about girders. These are the things that come together to make a film possible, especially at this budget where you're not thinking outside the realm to the big stars. Although, whatever, all of that is part of the process. But it was just very inspiring to meet Alex, and that sort of solidified my commitment to the movie.
We talk about re-envisioning, reimagining these stories, that there's such myths in our culture, and making them, updating them, making them kind of relevant. And there is in this film, again, it's called Blackout. There's a sort of an environmental subplot. Can you mention just a little bit about that, Larry or Alex, and talk about how you developed? Was this something that I don't know how intentional it is for you to include a thread like that in your story?
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, I think at this point, people just look for an environmental message in my movies because that's what
That's
I'm.
true. Yeah.
I would say that it's also about a community. It takes place in an upstate town. We shot it in and around Woodstock, New York. And there is a backstory of the sort of the town patriarch is trying to build a resort. Now, the truth is, that's not just some fantasy of mine railing against environmental degradation. It's actually precisely what happened in our area. There is a dude who's trying to make an enormous golf course on a mountain. So
Right.
then when you water the grass in order to do that, the pesticides go down, they flow down into the water. So blah, blah, blah. This is just exactly the kind of fights that happen constantly in small communities, especially. But I would argue that the other theme in the movie is sort of racism and scapegoating and other things like that. The character of Miguel, played by Rigo Garay, is blamed for the werewolf murder. So, I try to think about where we are, but also th this is a werewolf story. So then you think about, well, that's a divided personality. Obviously, you're a monster at night, and then you're sort of dealing with that in the daytime, which connects to alcoholism. So you see, there's a lot of threads, and that's how I like to approach these, as you say, these mythologies, and that's what's so beautiful. These are our Greek myths,
Right.
instead of Achilles with a weak, heel. We have the werewolf with the problem with the moon, which is, by the way, that's what becomes fun, is what do you borrow from the old stories and what do you reject? I always like playing with the mythology. Why would a silver bullet really hurt a werewolf? So you're kind of always teetering on the edge of, is this real at all? Or does this guy have other problems? And that's very explicit in my movie called Habit, which is a vampire movie.
Right.
I don't even know if there's a vampire in the movie, but he's definitely suffering from something.
Yeah, and I'll just say, Adam, in reference to your other question, which I totally didn't answer, yes, I
That's
did
okay.
watch all the Lon Chaney movies again in preparation to shoot, but the film that inspired me the most was Habit. And that was like that's one of my favorite films of all time.
Me, yeah, mine too.
And I felt like this film was like very, well, you're in good company then. I felt like there were a lot of similar themes, but like Larry's work as an actor in that film was the thing that I wanted to do most. And then also, like, just so you know, like in preparation, like Larry really worked with me a lot. I mean, we were talking about this 2 years out. So there was, many conversations, werewolf movement conversations, videos sent from his more like, this is the kind of thing I'm looking for, you
Sure,
see?
right.
This is the kind of noise we're gonna do here. And so by the time we got to set, it was just like, all right, All right, cool. Let's go. You
Yeah,
know?
it was so fun. And Alex, remind us of your movement guy as well. He had
Oh
a
yeah, Matt Neenan. Yeah, well, my mother was a ballet dancer, and she like goes all over the world staging Balanchine ballets. That's like her niche. She's one of the best in her field. And yes, I mean, she's everywhere, like Paris, London, and then like right now she's in San Francisco. Like, she's all over the place. It's nuts. I have very talented parents. It's my cross to bear. So growing up, one of my babysitters was a ballet dancer. He ended up becoming a really fantastic choreographer. And when we started talking, Larry was like, "I think it's Fosse. I think it's a lot of Fosse movements." And I just said, "Listen,
interesting.
do you mind if I hit up this choreographer and ask him to help me?" And so I would get on Zoom with this guy that I'd known since I was 9 years old, who danced at my grandmother's ballet school. My grandmother also had a ballet school. Very ballet actors. And he would just be like, "Nope, that's not the run. Do it again. All right, like this, a little bit lower. Can you do this more with your head? More up, more up, more up." And then yeah, so by the time we got to set, it was just like, it was second nature. It was awesome. Yeah, there was so much good preparation for this.
You
Yeah.
feel maybe like somebody was actually channeling the,
That that's a
like that kind
thing,
of
Adam.
animal, like in order.
That's a thing, and I think it's about commitment. But the first night I actually got into the wolf, it was the shot in the film. Am I giving this away, Larry? Is that okay for me to do that? All right. There's a shot in the film where the wolf is chewing out someone's jugular, and Larry was off, and we were getting the shot, and all of a sudden he just said howl, and I'd been practicing my howl for a month or two at this point, maybe even longer. But I howled, and it felt like something inside of my chest cavity broke, and it just came out. It was the teeth were, I don't know, and for every direction for about 10 miles in every direction, all these dogs and coyotes started howling back. And everyone there was just like, "What just happened?" So yeah, there is a magic. There is a magic. And there's a lot about dads in this film, which is also a theme that like Larry visits in some of his work. And my dad had literally died in March, and we went to shoot Principal end of August, September. So that hadn't happened when we were preparing for this film, and then all of a sudden we were like, "We're going to shoot." So I mean, yeah, there are weird coincidences, and I'm not like, "Oh, that had to happen for us to do this film," but like the film was this beautiful opportunity to honor and like grieve this loss in my life and in my siblings' lives and in my kids' lives. It was like a pretty major, hole.
And he's in the movie, William Hurt.
What's that, Larry?
Alex's dad is in the movie.
Oh, he is.
Privilege to us. We use Alex's real childhood photos when he's recollecting the character of his own father's past. And so we use William Hurt in the movie, which of course is obviously a tribute to Altered States and other genre pictures that he was involved with. But it's very startling. And I don't know if people will see this interview and it's another spoiler, but it's fun to understand that some people just sort of are watching the movie and slowly discovering that, trying to put it all together. So there's lots of little weird self-referential Easter eggs in the film.
The film is called Blackout. It's going to open tonight Well, as we speak, I should say tonight, I'll try to get some get this going today. Tricky, but I will make every effort so we let people know that both Alex and Larry and perhaps others from the film will be at the IFC Center this evening. Are there
This evening
others?
and tomorrow evening too,
And
yeah. So the
Thursday night
13th
too.
and the 14th. Larry,
Okay.
Larry, we're scheduled to do a Q&A tomorrow, so you're going to be there, man. Because I'm coming.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, baby.
Tonight and tomorrow, Alex will be up on stage in John's Square office until Jim Foster and Lisa Gray and some other actors. It's an ensemble piece as well. It's another thing that's fun about the movie. A lot of wonderful actors make
Yeah.
appearances.
No, the Barbara, I wrote down a couple of names here, but some of your regular great Marshall Bell is in this. It's a truly great Joe Swanberg. Many great film people. I'll say film people because they're not all your conventional actors. So this just in, it opens near New York City today, but out wide on April 12th and on demand digitally. Also in April. So excellent. Everybody will have an opportunity to see Blackout. And listen, really thank you guys. And I wish you great success with the film. And yeah. And Alex, I hope you're able to come back on with a future project. Larry, maybe. We'll see. Larry.
We got something else cooking, Adam. We got something else cooking. But thank you so much for having us. It was really nice to
Oh,
meet you.
well, yeah, Mano, it's a pleasure. Real pleasure. So have a great day and have a great screening or two tonight. And yeah, I'll look forward to talking to you guys again.
Talk soon. Later.
Stuart?
You're really a werewolf.
I'd rather be dead.
Charlie! Charlie! Stay with me, man!
I can't wait to see your face.
When you realize what's happening.
All right, so here is this other episode with my friend Larry Fessenden. We cover a lot of ground. It was during the sort of the waning days of the pandemic, but here it is. This is my conversation with another. Here's another conversation of mine with the film art, I guess, filmmaker Larry Devon, with the filmmaker Larry Fessenden, right here on FilmWax. Oh, yes. You scared me. You just snuck up on me like that.
Well, I'm going to light myself a little better. Hey,
No, I don't know. I liked it. It was very fitting.
can you hear me? Is
No, you sound good. It's Larry.
yeah. After that preamble,
This makes for good podcasting.
no doubt. I know you
It's so
feel.
nice that you keep coming back on, by the way. So,
Sure.
you know, I mean, I'm not sure. There's so many. Everybody has this podcast, and I'm sure you have one, and you don't even. Maybe you're not even aware that you have one. That's how ubiquitous they are now.
I've
Have you
tried
noticed?
to do a podcast. I tried twice with my friend Joe,
But the
but
microphone wasn't working.
yeah, No, we did it very diligently.
Okay.
But unfortunately, our agenda was to discuss politics and the future of the of the world, and we got all tripped up by sort of identity politics. We felt it was difficult to be assertive and truthful because we had to watch our step. So it was an interesting experiment in how it's hard to have an opinion in the current culture.
Yeah, it is. Because there's going to be.
But, so it was fine.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. I mean, like, either you're going to offend a percentage of the population, no matter what stand you take or what your values that you express are, they're just going to be offensive to people that maybe would never have thought about it a few years earlier, like 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Yes, as soon as I get up in the morning, I'm offending someone. That's obvious now. Yeah. So yes, one day I'll have a podcast and I'll save the world. But until that time, I remain mute.
I hear you. So, okay, well, that's going to make this a very short conversation. I was just going to talk about the midterms. What I was thinking, considering doing was sort of a pivoting the show, this thing into a little bit more of a middle ground where it wouldn't be overtly political, but it would be like I would just cover films. This is what I was thinking about. I haven't taken really any serious steps other than to be a little bit more thoughtful about booking the show. Current company accepted it or included it, whatever you're. I could defend you on this very episode and alienate you if I'm not careful. But I was thinking, you know, I could just program the show, make like choose films that at least the conversations contribute somehow positively to the world, you know? So there's so many films that kind of have the subject matter or the, you know, or different projects that people are working on, like your own, when you were doing that podcast. I remember talking to you about that and you were blogging about it, right?
About what are we talking about?
I'm just saying, like, you were, I remember maybe about 5 years ago, it may be a little less than that.
Yeah.
I remember you were writing. I thought, unless I'm mistaken.
Well, listen, I had long-standing project that I started in the early, about 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just trying to sort through, and I wanted to make a feature film that was sort of opinion piece essay about the direction of humanity, if you will. And my co-partner didn't quite see it the way I did. So eventually I made it into a website called
That's what I remember.
.com, and that's still there. And it lays out a series of ideas which seem quaint now because it was in 2016 that I put them together. And of course we've devolved further since then. It was still the idea of the common good being something worth talking about. And now that's just sort of been drummed out of the media itself.
Yeah.
Anyway, obviously we have to save ourselves somehow. So it's worth screaming into the wind, but I find the current environment and the media environment and even the showbiz environment to just be deafeningly intolerant on all sides. So it's frustrating.
And I don't know, like I'm getting, I'm having a lot of, I'm having pre-TSD.
I agree. Yeah. If you think about the future. It's,
yeah. I'm actually quite terrified, but that's okay. Tonight it's just about, well, you and me. Anyway, so I'm living up here. I saw you for a minute, like in Kingston, after that, that kind of the state of film or what it was, the Chronogram and Woodstock Film Festival.
Right. It was some conversation about making movies upstate with Barry. Luminaries and myself. It was nice. Here. I mean, it's look, I love making movies upstate. I think it's, well, they're different conversations because there's sort of the excitement that Netflix and HBO are up here, but that isn't actually of any good to me. It's good for the community, and it does prove the point that this is a great place to make movies, and we should have our tax incentives and so on. But then there's indie film, and that's sort of another conversation. I don't want that to get lost in the shuffle of excitement that Netflix is here, because it's a different business model, quite honestly. But let's have it all.
So Netflix is here, so they're investing money in the area, is what you're saying.
Well, I'm saying that a Netflix movie comes to town, that's going to be a bigger paycheck for everybody.
Right, 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 right.
And you don't want people to become spoiled and think that's the only way to engage with filmmakers. And, you know, I deliberately just made a film I finished a week and a half ago, and one of my agendas was to integrate with the community and some of the vendors. I've gone to their shops for years and say, can I come in here and film? And we'll be a very soft footprint. And, you know, let's support the arts and people who come from this area and have, you know, shopped at your venue. And let's do that. We all know that we're all waiting for Netflix to show up, but there's also community. So,
it's almost a kind of a more cooperative approach. Or,
exactly. It's like, you have your grocery store and you have your cooperative, and different ways to do the same thing.
And what is that? I remember meeting, maybe I think I have the card here, actually. I just pull it out like that. No, I don't. I thought it was going to be the Hudsy, the, is that what it's called? That was the Hudson Film Organization. I met this woman who, she was on the, was she on the, I think somebody from that organization was on the panel. And then I ended up meeting somebody from there at the Woodstock Film Festival. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Oh, sorry. It was like Hudsy or H-U-D-S-Y maybe, or something like that. It was a organization in the Hudson Valley, which I guess is like a facility to help maybe, I don't know, fundraise, maybe finance, or maybe, I don't know, pull together resources for filmmaking in the Hudson Valley, or it's a facility. I have to look at them. I should bring her on at some point, but
well, there were a lot of great voices in that panel. Laurent, who's long-suffering Hudson Valley Film Commission, wasn't there. And he's who I associate with, writing an email, giving a phone call to get locations and ideas. And he's been very supportive over the years. And I feel like he's sort of the backbone. I've written many letters on his behalf in order to support the tax incentive, which of course politicians are very suspicious of. They don't understand how much money a movie does bring in. Now, never mind Netflix versus indie film. We just spent a lot of money in the local community just buying soda pop and ice, you know, in order to support our troops. So, I associate Laurent, the Hudson Valley Film Commission, with getting the job done. But I think there's a lot of other interested parties now, and they were probably represented there. I just don't have the memory for that sort of thing, but by all means, they're all worth celebrating. Everybody's contributed in some way.
And I appreciated that you're you bring it back to you kept bringing it back to community and about to making authentic art in the, you know, within the community. And it's to me, it's always going to be, there'll be an interest in it. I mean, I don't think you really need to worry too much about the marketing and the branding. Although you're told that you need to worry about that. One is told that it's, you know, you have to spend an enormous amount of resources on it. But I don't know. What do you think about that? Like in terms of your films, I guess you have a track record you can lean on to some degree, right? Friendships and relationships in a lot of festivals.
Yeah. I have also a reputation because I mentored so many filmmakers that I have an extended family of people that I'm associated with, which is my benefit because I'm associated with Ty West and Kelly Reichert. Doesn't mean I have their level of talent or their particular career arcs, but I was there from the start with those guys, and I encouraged them and many others, Jim Mickle and James McKinney and various other types, but many of whom have entered into the workforce, so to speak, while I lived on the edges. But so I have my own trajectory, and the bottom line is that filmmaking is a very expensive, difficult enterprise. And, you know, you need a lot of advocates in order to make a movie, which is to say you need a movie star that will get you the money, and then you need the studio or some version of that, or at the very least, a private investor who's deluded into thinking they'll make money off of a little film. All of those things need nurturing and capturing. And then there's the business of making the actual work and getting in touch with your artistic abilities, you know, and you don't rehearse filmmaking the way you rehearse. Even if you're in a band, you get to play, or if you're a painter or a writer. So it's a very difficult landscape. And there's a lot of chatter around the edges. You know, they don't always, in my opinion, talk about the actual art form of cinema anymore. They just talk about money and movie stars and deals. And the emphasis is sometimes disappointingly off topic. But all of that is the way of the world. There's a lot of other things to complain about in the world. This is just one aspect. Anyway, I like the art form very, very much. So I do what I can to build these small pictures. And I also like working cheap or small because you have an ability to integrate with nature and fate and all the other things that are at play. I don't want total control. That's just not how I want to make a film. So it's also my nature. I'm lucky in a way that it suits me to make smaller movies.
What would you do though, if you, let's say all of a sudden, I don't know, James Pattinson or somebody like that would, his people reached out to you and said, he really wants to work with you. And that actually is not a bad example, because he's like worked with, you know, the Safdies, and he's David Cronenberg and people like that. He's actually a risk taker. I mean, relative to the, you know, colleagues that he amongst which he travels or bandies.
All of this is possible. I mean, I've had certain cool movie stars express affection for some of my movies. And so then you think the next step.
But then there are people that won't let them do it.
Well, that's actually very true. And I think sometimes the artists unfettered would do things that they don't end up doing. I certainly went through this when I was trying to cast my Frankenstein movie.
Yeah.
Depraved, is I really tried to reach out to some of the movie stars that we have great affection for, Mark Ruffalo types and you know, Adam Driver and so on. And, you know, it wasn't my time, so to speak. Any of that is possible. There's wonderful things in the world. If somebody in power like Pattinson takes a shine to a project or even an artist, there's something that can develop. But there are a lot of forces that think that's not a great idea and there's a better trajectory for their career. And you can fight that. I always love the story that Wes Anderson wanted Gene Hackman in the Royal Tenenbaums, and Hackman said absolutely not. You know, he was an old salt, and he didn't know who this young whippersnapper was. And you know, Wes stuck with it, and he went back to him. But there's some great stories like that, but there's just as many stories that aren't told about utter failure at knocking at the door. So, you know, you have to choose.
So I guess your thing would be, if you're talking to a movie star, just say Angelica Houston's in my movie. Just
yeah, exactly. I didn't have that ammunition. But actually, that is true about casting. If you say, "Well, I got these other folks,"
right? It's
you can build a.
It's like a Django. Was that what the name of the?
Whatever with the.
Blocks that you're stacking and carefully, otherwise one falls out, the whole thing could topple. But I wonder what your conversation would be like, Larry, if let's say, because you get a movie star, and you've probably worked with movie stars in some capacities. Maybe you were on a set or something, and then, you know, they are rumored that they will take over a film a lot of the times.
Well, that's.
So I wonder how you would keep control over the project, knowing that maybe somebody who could bring in a lot of money into your film, but maybe you don't want that.
That's a question, because it comes down to really that's like saying, would you work in Hollywood to do a remake of Wrong Turn? I mean, I'm not sure. And also, you don't trust. Look, you put forth your pitch, and if they like it, maybe you trust that that's what they'll do. But they also, they meaning, you know, the folks in power are very skittish, and they want to make sure they're keeping their eye on the bottom line. And so they're going to make some, I think, watered down choices, and it becomes less and less the point of why you would make such a movie, any movie. So, you know, you just have to find the balance. It's all about communication and trust and a lot of things that are fraying at the edges in our society. There's also just less of an impulse towards art that speaks of something, art that challenges. And some of the things I grew up on in the 70s, movies were really the most important, I think, mode of communication. And they were political, they were engaged in society, they were trying to make a difference and speak for alternative voices and portray, you know, when the anti-hero came up, it was a big deal. That was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Taxi Driver. This whole legacy of storytelling has been watered down by all the different new mediums from Disney Plus to TikTok. I mean, you realize the kids aren't really all on the same, you know, the old cliche of the water cooler conversation. I mean, it used to be that everybody saw Roots that night and they come together and talk about it. But now there's such an enormous array of
content being coming at everybody from different, yeah.
So that's just that's the nature of it. You know, that started with cable news, and I remember when they were, you know, they used to be Sports Illustrated, and it had a fishing section maybe or whatever. Now it's there's the fishing channel.
There's fly fishing channel, and there's a, you know, deep fishing, deep sea fishing, what have you. Yeah.
Most importantly, there's the swimsuit channel.
Yeah, I didn't know that they had other things in the magazine.
Yeah, that's right.
First I've heard of it.
Why we're talking about Sports Illustrated all the time.
Yeah, getting back to the beginning of our conversation. So here's something. As you were talking about the 70s films, and I did want to maybe make a illustrate something that might give, if not hope, some interest around this, the anti-hero idea. So my son, who's always been like very straight arrow kid, you know, he's always been very, you know, I don't know how to say it, like he's just very young and
safe,
and yeah, he's played it safe. I mean, you know, he lives in Brooklyn, his friends experiment with all these, but he's been almost like a straight edge in his own. But then it's interesting, he was watching Breaking Bad, you know, he started watching it. Say that again. I keep missing you.
He's a meth addict.
No, he's a meth addict. Yes. That's the kind of joke you hope people can laugh at the first time you say, not the third. But so but he no he he it actually had this impact on him because he said, you know, don't tell mom this. That's my favorite way to start a sentence. But he was saying that, you know, it's interesting because he's a good guy, but he sees the moral complexity of this guy, that he's an ant, that he becomes this sort of guy who makes some choices that are pretty, complicated, you know, about because, you know, you've seen it, right? You know the story. So Anyway, he said, you know, I feel like, I don't know, I could have a drink or, you know, take a drug. I said, whoa. No, but I said, yeah, I mean, I understand what you're coming from. He's 18. He's not like 14, you know, but he never drank. He has not drank, you know, and which I can relate to. I didn't drink either until I think was like around his age or later. And but I like that he just realized that doing that doesn't necessarily make him a bad person.
Right. Yeah.
That he can make choices that are not always so buttoned up or whatever, you know, and that it's okay. It doesn't make you a bad guy. So I just like that. That's what he took from watching that show. It wasn't, you know, just a waste of time or just junk food, you know?
Well, look, that's the point. I mean, our, I'm going to call it cinema. It's not pretentious. It's kind of to elevate, the place of movies in our lives, but movies and obviously literature and stuff, it matters, and it's supposed to matter. It's supposed to be life altering in the right, best possible ways. And I still operate under that hope that your film will make a difference, not necessarily teach a lesson, but be something that affects you in an emotional way that may change your perspective and make you drink more. I mean, this is the hope.
But you're always making. What did you? You mentioned you just recently finished a project.
Yeah.
And what's that one?
It's called Blackout, and I shot it upstate in September and October, and I just wrapped, and now I'm editing, and it's my next scary movie.
Blackout. Can you name somebody who might be in it? Or who is in it?
Alex Hurt is the star.
Who?
Alex Hurt. He's actually the son of William Hurt. They have a number of actors in it. James LeGros and Kevin Corrigan and Barbara Crampton and Joe Swanberg and
the usual suspects.
Yeah. It's kind of it's a little bit of a gathering of old Glass Eye collaborators in a way of asserting a certain world that I've been playing in for some years. And so there's a certain self-awareness in that regard. You might almost call it meta.
You haven't actually used the expression Glass Eye Picks or Glass Eye Universe, so I appreciate it, but the world works.
Yeah, and actually I have used that on the set. We talked about the Monsterverse, because this is another monster movie, and I've made a vampire film and a Frankenstein film, so this is
the logical next.
Yeah, so that's what I'm up to. It's very deliberate and self-aware, and also continues to fill that niche I have of wanting to tell classic horror stories in a modern vernacular. So on I go in my silly folly.
I look forward to it. We're going to have to like I'll get on here. I mean, Kevin, I think, would do it. He's been on here a bunch of times. He's the sweetest guy.
Yeah.
And James not had success getting him on yet, but, you know, polite persistence.
He may get on if Kevin's there.
Well, there you go. The building blocks again. Right. Barbara would do it. She's been on before. She's good about that. I'm sure Barbara would do it, right?
Yeah.
Well, do you have like a What's the plan? Is the plan to get it into some festivals first?
Well, we'll see. We have to finish the movie.
You're in post.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in post for a week, so it's all the future of the film. But one thing I have to say is that I'm very impatient, and I feel that the pomp and circumstances of festivals is something that hasn't always gone my way. So
understood.
I will make every effort to get into a noteworthy festival and then sell the picture and get it to the public. That's really my ultimate goal. But that's everybody's goal, and we'll see if I can follow those steps. It's unknowable.
I'm going to a film festival nearby I haven't been to before tomorrow. Film Columbia.
Where's that?
It's in Chatham.
Chatham, New York?
Yeah.
How quaint.
At the Crandall Theater. What's that?
I said, how quaint. That sounds fantastic.
Well, I'm, you know, I have a feeling they just don't advertise because I think it's just a lot of, I don't know. I think it's a lot of people who live in the area and, you know, they just support this theater and they come out. And so, you know, that way it's a kind of a nice example of what we were talking about. And their place is pretty good. But the two people that run it have pretty hefty credentials in film industry terms, Peter Biskind, who I'm sure you've read some of his work, and Larry Kardish.
Well, that's sweet. And, you know, obviously they're just in a rural place and having fun celebrating film. And I think,
yeah, there you go.
Wonderful. And, you know, even a festival like Telluride has a little of that vibe. It's obviously mm-hmm. important, but I think, you know, film as community, as events, people getting together and celebrating, the work is fantastic. So
you should listen to Larry Kardish. You know, he's been around way too long doing this stuff. So I'm sure I know he's been asked like a million times about his feeling about cinema. What's like the biggest things, you know, changes? They're the biggest whatever in things that have had the most impact. You know, and I was asking him things, trying to get him to open, and he did a little bit. He did. And he really just also was just passionate about people going to, he went to see two horror films, he said. And he goes, you know, you want to be in a movie theater seeing a horror movie because, of course, you all feed on each other's reaction, of course, but you're also, you're provide one another security and safety in a way, emotionally speaking, of course, you know, which you, by yourself, you just pause and walk into the kitchen or something if you get too tense, you know. Yeah. It's really, it was a very acute, I thought,
well, that's how
perspective.
That's how all of this started. And, you know, I enjoy watching a movie at home. And, you know, the thing to remember when we have these conversations is the screens that we have at home and the sound system are considerably better. So lamenting the death of cinema in the face of your 60-inch screen is, you know, it's a different thing than when the alternative was a tiny television. But with all that in mind, the community aspect has faded.
And right.
I feel like a certain entitlement the audience has to get content when they want it, how they want it. There's no sense of anticipation. And, you know, I still like physical media, which is a whole other really sidelined conversation. But I like buying a Blu-ray of a movie I care about, putting it on the shelf. And that movie is always there reminding me that these are the films I've chosen to own. Just the way books have that role. You glance up at a book that you maybe haven't read in a long time, or maybe, let's be honest, you only read the first couple chapters, but it still speaks to you. And so I appreciate that. That's a generational thing as well. Obviously the kids listen to Spotify, but a lot of us can talk about our record collection and the albums that matter to us, and they're worn out from being carried around over the years. All of this is, it's both generational, but it's worth knowing that elders have something to say about the world. And I think when the purchase you made of media and books meant something, and your collection meant something. So I still stand by those sort of that thinking.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think when I moved up here and I finally got all my crap that had been in some sort of, diaspora, like I had some stuff at my aunt's place, some place in storage in New Jersey, someplace, some at my dad, you know, and I finally just moved into this place up here and I just got everything together. And I just was able to open up my, you know, books and the music and oh, I just felt like, here's my identity. Look at that.
Yeah, it's very true. So,
Larry Fessenden is the founder and president. What is your title at Glass Apex? Creative. You're the creative.
When I sign stuff, it just says I'm the president, which is something that Donald Trump can't claim. So I enjoy writing that I'm.
You're right. He's an ex. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks as always. This is fantastic. And yeah, appreciate it. Sorry for being a minute or two late there.
Yeah, no, it has been fantastic.
I can't wait for Blackout. It's on the radar. And, I'll hit you up when the time comes.
Well, yes, I'll have to finish it. And then
I know. Next year's. It's fine. I'm sure it'll all be some, I don't know, like it could be in the spring. It could be, by the time this thing is all ready to go. We should end it. And then I just want to say one or two things. All right. So
goodbye.
Exactly. Goodbye. I just wanted to mention, you're in the city right now, I think, right? You in the city? Okay. Cause I know said you were shooting upstate. Okay. And, I think I mentioned to you though, it was a little bit chaotic at the, at that event in Kingston, but, I'm working at a radio station in Red Hook. It's talk about like media and just, it's just been, so rewarding and, amazing to work in an old-fashioned like independent radio station. But I didn't really know other than college stations that this type of thing existed. And they've got this great formula where all of the sponsors are just regional businesses, almost entirely independently owned independent businesses. So and they're all get behind this radio station, and the radio station can play I'd say 75-80% deeper cuts, not singles necessarily, play songs, maybe some of it's from classic stuff, but you would hear cuts you wouldn't normally hear. But a lot of it is just contemporary artists. Like they'll go to, you have your big star, like a Brandi Carlile. Well, instead, maybe they'll go to somebody, maybe the next few down the pecking order of female singers, singer-songwriters or what have you. And so you just get exposed to all this fantastic music that you just don't get to hear in any other radio station.
Well, I also have been in bands, and the whole thing was to be on the college radio station tour.
Sure.
And so I have tremendous affection for that. Also, I listen to Woodstock Radio, which clearly has the same thing. I mean, they're local restaurants and stores. What's the call letters of?
Yeah, I will tell you to give our radio station as like an alternative option, maybe on your, on the radio dial, on your in your favorite buttons, whatever you do. It's 98.1, but they go by 98.1 KZE. So it's WKZE is the call letters, are the call letters, and it's 98.1 or 105.9. If you have trouble with 98.1, they also have 105.9.
I've listened to KZE for years. In fact, almost preferred it to Woodstock Radio, but Beck sort of shamed me into saying, why aren't you listening to the local?
You're local. We are local, and the advertiser are in Hurley and in Woodstock. And you know, there are a lot of their our sponsors are, and of course the signal goes over to there. I was just gonna say I'm on the air from 10 to 3. Now I'm not saying that you should listen to me because I'm really mostly there, although I do tell some anecdotes and I'll talk about film, and I'm developing a, I think I mentioned this to you, but it was in passing, that I'm going to develop a sort of a show on the, I think on the weekend, which would be about music in film.
Great. Well, keep me posted. I've got lots to say about that.
Oh, you can come on and co-host it once in a while.
Yeah, I will. What are you doing from 10 to fucking 3 if you're not?
I'm just what they call back selling songs, meaning I'm just announcing the songs that were just on.
Yeah.
And I talk about, you know, I sell soap. I mean, in a way, I'll do the weather. But then it's just a matter of you're chatting. You're just trying to keep, or if there are events going on locally, and there have been a lot over the last few months, you know, it's a lot of that is talking about a lot of the local festivals and happenings, you know, whatever, food festivals. And
as it should be. I mean,
yeah.
God, there's still independent radio. It's one of the last.
This is so true to, it's so non-corporate in every way. And it's just, it's a very, very, I don't know how long I can work there. Like I need to kind of have a bigger plan but I did move up here without much of a plan and I landed on my feet, but I need to, you know, grow. And I don't know that a little station like this is a place for me to be able to really do that. We'll see, but it's great right now.
It sounds like it's good for your mental health, and that's something.
Yeah. Well, and also we're not talking, you know, it's not a political station, so that's good.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
You know, I don't know. I'm going to white knuckle it for the next couple of weeks. Yeah, it's out of my control.
It could be really bad, but we'll see.
Yeah, right. I guess that's what I wanted to tell you. Yeah. Yeah. Give it a listen in, you know, but at least sneak in sometime. But, you know, I'm not like doing something worth like that's, you know, not like doing a real show. It's a shift. You know what I mean? That I have.
That's nice. I like it.
Yeah. Me too.
Cool. It's good to see you, Adam.
Thank you. Same here. I'm sorry I missed you at the Woodstock Film Festival, but
I was filming.
Oh, yeah, of course. Right. The timing. But Jack had a short in there. You went to that.
A short that he made in film. So he was very excited to present that. It was nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll let you go and I'll be in touch.
Okay, man. Ciao, ciao. Right.
Take care. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back in a few days with my conversation with musician and friend and upstate resident like myself, Mick Lynch, right here on Film Wax Radio.